Today's Transmissions podcast is brought to you by 80stees.com. 80stees.com has an incredible selection of Transformers shirts and hoodies, including some amazing Transformers costume hoodies. Transform into Grimlock, Megatron, or even Optimus Prime with the 80stees.com costume hoodies. Hello, all sentient beings, and welcome to the Transmissions Podcast, where we talk about all news, toys, and comic books related to the Transformers. On this episode of Transmissions, IDW Transformers comic book artist Alex Milne joins us as we talk about toys, comics, and share all the things we picked up this week from our trips to the store. We have all this and so very much more on this very special episode of Transmissions.
Welcome to Transmissions, the podcast that believes the truth is out there, but it's such a disappointment. I'm your host, Charles, a.k.a. Big C, and I'm joined by the excellent Transmissions team, Yusuf, better known as Yoshi.
How's it going, Barry White, a podcasting host?
Jeremy, a.k.a. Yakko.
Hello.
And Daryl, the Cybertronian Beast.
Hey, how's it going? Let's talk Transformers.
All right, and imported from our last episode, we have superstar artist Alex Milne right here with us.
Yay! It's just too much to contain in one episode.
And he's going to join us and talk some Transformers. All right, so we start every show with toys. So, Daryl, let's talk some toys.
Right on. Now, before we get into toys, Charles, why didn't you tell us that you were on the underbase for their year-end wrap show?
I thought I'd mentioned it. I recorded that like a month ago, and
nope.
It was...
Daryl and I both had no idea.
Not a clue.
Okay.
Here I was listening to it at work, and I was like, hey, that's Charles.
I know that voice. Sounds like Barry White.
Yeah, Amy, Lady Rec, just emailed me and said, hey, I'm putting together this show. I just want you to get your comments on a couple of things. And so it was like really quick, a 10-minute, just... asked me what my favorite comics were, since I had responded to her thread on Full Metal Hero about the favorite end of the year stuff. So if you guys had done that too, maybe she would have asked you too. So I don't know.
Oh, we're just, I mean, it's going to be a few weeks old now by the time this comes out.
Yeah, that's so right.
If you still haven't heard it, head over to the underbase and listen.
Right. Definitely.
Of course, they're all going to go listen. It's Barry White, for God's sakes. Well, and, I like comic issue 1 and issue 2.
Well, and like More Than Meets the Eye just kind of racked up all their end of year awards.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Very, very similar to our end of the year show where with our listener right. poll.
It's like the book is good or something.
Can't be. The person it works on, it's a dick.
All right, into toys. Yeah. First up, we got a new third-party company. Seems like every other day there's a new company coming out. Third-party company popped up literally this morning called Gigapower, and they are producing another masterpiece-scale Dinobot. This one is Snarl, and it looks phenomenal. I mean, really, really good. And this one here, I have to say, looks so much like the G1 figure. I mean, again, this is in prototype colors, so it's just gray, essentially. But the detailing is there. This is a completely separate company from Fans Toys, who are producing the Slag figure, or Slug, or whatever you want to call them. But yeah, these guys, they're coming out, and there's still a Swoop figure being produced, perhaps two. So the Dinobots, they're getting done. It's pretty impressive. What do you guys think of this?
Yeah, I almost don't believe that the figure in this picture can transform. It's so detailed. I'm kind of amazed that this is going to be a real, like, transformable toy.
Mm-hmm. I actually see them just doing a much more highly detailed version of the G1 figure in this.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it looks exactly the same, just with new, modern toy engineering.
Right.
But other than that, it looks like the exact same transformations going on.
Mm-hmm. Am I to see this correctly? Does it appear that they want to make every Dinobot?
Well, I would assume so, but what seems to be happening is one company's doing one, another company's doing another one. We've already got, you know, Masterpiece Grimlock that came out years ago, and, you know, every company seems to be doing a different one, which is kind of funny, but they all plan on doing all five of them eventually. But to start off, you might be able to get all five of them from five different companies right off the hop.
Organized anarchy.
It really is.
I mean, it's weird because usually we'll see all like a bunch of different third-party companies all doing the same type of thing, like the different Devastators. So I guess this is a better option for consumers in that they don't have to choose which company to buy their figures from. Just buy one from each and you're done.
That's right. Now, obviously, we don't have any pricing on this or, you know, any kind of release date. This is literally just, like I said, it came out this morning. And, you know, we just got this one prototype picture, and the name of the company is Giga Power. You know, it's out there, and it's looking cool, and I'm impressed. I'm looking forward to seeing the color images.
If you look at the image here, I can see the head of the Stegosaurus behind the knee, like blur right behind the knee, the shape where the head is.
Mm-hmm. In the foot?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like if you go up right behind the knee joint area, right there, yep. That shape, that's where the head is. So looking at it now, I can see how parts of it are going to transform. So this thing will transform.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Doesn't Masterpiece Grimlock also do some stuff like that in his foot?
Yeah, where the tail
pieces is. Fold in there.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, it looks... I'm very impressed with this thing.
I love the meme that Super Grimlock posted down on the thread there. It has begun!
Cool. All right, Jeremy, what do you have for us?
I have something from Japan. It is,
that narrows it down.
Yeah, it's is it Hinkei? Is that how you pronounce it?
Yeah.
Hinkei Specialist Autobot 3-Pack, which is basically they're re-releasing the Generations Cup, Ratchet, and Perceptor figures that came out a while back. I think Cup is probably the most well-known because you can get that alternate head from a third party that has the Saigar in it. But Robot Kingdom has had this pre-order up. Actually, is it a pre-order? I didn't see. Oh, it's coming out in June. So it's we didn't have anything really other than the pictures of them. But I would hope that when they come out, they'll have the Japanese paint jobs, which, you know, pop a little bit better than the American versions. What do you guys think?
I would assume they would have the Japanese paint jobs. The pictures on here show the Japanese paint jobs. And the prize to this set is the Ratchet, which, unfortunately, the Ratchet is not a great figure, but it was extremely difficult to find. So not a lot of people have, you know, Classics Ratchet. But these look really good. I mean, I don't have Ratchet, but I do have Cup, and I do have Perceptor. And Cup's a great figure. I love that figure. It looks like I don't have my Cup sitting in front of me right here, but this Hinkei figure looks like it has new rims. I'm not entirely sure, but I'd have to double check. But the Perceptor figure initially was a huge pain in the butt to transform. And the Ratchet figure was just a horrendous figure to transform. Just didn't seem to work at all. But the paint jobs on them make them look fabulous in both modes.
Yeah, the Ratchet figure does look like it has a little shine to him in the picture we have here.
Mm-hmm.
So, Perceptor's alt mode is a vehicle now.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
But there was a way. I think a fan did fan mode out a microscope mode with him.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it didn't. I mean, you had to use a bit of imagination, but I think there was a handle there.
Mm-hmm. So these were all, like, originally Classics figures from a few years ago?
Yeah, well, Cup's a Generations figure from, okay, like, 3 years ago. Perceptor is Reveal the Shield, I think he is. And Ratchet, like I said, is Classics from way back.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, for me, I really like the Cup, and the Perceptor robot mode I really like. This was when I was not collecting toys at all, so they all look pretty cool. I'd like to check them out, but okay. Yoshi, what do you have?
Well, sir, I have a little bit of an update from iGear and their Con Air Rapid Squad. This is the Three Seekers We've got updated color images on these bad boys now in both robot and alt mode. And I think they look pretty sick, especially Starscream with that smirk on his face. What am I leaving out, Daryl?
Oh, I was just going through the pictures here. I'm on the a bit on the opposite side here. I was really gung-ho for these guys at the start, and I was really impressed with them. And then the colors came out, this image came out, and I don't know, I think the colors are just too solid. I mean, maybe our resident artist here can comment on the fact that the colors are just really blocky. But I don't know, I can't get behind that the colors are not doing justice to the figure. I don't know. Alex, what do you think?
Well, maybe with these pictures here, the colors are looking a little flat. Maybe they've used some matte finish. But it might be like the placement of some of the colors. They don't have enough breaking up certain areas to give it a dynamic visual look. Okay. I'd say like the Starscream alt mode is pretty bland looking. The robot mode is not too bad. I'm not really a fan of the faces on them.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. I guess they're not really that shiny looking. It's hard to say. The Skywarp's not too bad. I might want more black in some of the torso. But
I cannot unsee the face in the torso. I saw it once, and I just can't unsee that.
Yeah,
it's like a movie-style face.
Ah, damn it. You've ruined it for me now.
My job is done.
Yeah. I could see, like, Johnny Five or a Gurren Lagann in there.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of the chest, how that looks. I mean, beyond just it looking like a face, I don't know. There's something about it that just doesn't work for me compared to like the traditional G1 kind of more blocky chest, I guess.
It looks cheap. That's what it comes down to. The whole thing looks cheap.
It's weird, right? Because I was really excited about these things when we were looking at prototype images.
Yeah.
And then the colors come out and I really am not excited about them anymore. And the prices, like, iGear did a really smart thing, and they broke up the set. Like, when they first came out, you had to buy all three of these guys together, $300. That's a humongous investment. And then they broke them up so you could buy them all individually, and this is $100 a piece. Still, $100 is a lot of money for one toy. Now, for me, $100, I better like both modes a lot. I don't have hundreds of dollars to throw away on you know, toys. You know, I'm not made of money. So for me, if there's an inkling of something that I'm not going to really enjoy on this thing, I'm not going to get it. And this color palette that they've chosen here is just not doing it for me, unfortunately.
These are supposed to be like a semi take on the, ongoing, designs that Dawn came up with, I think.
I
look at it because of the split wing, and there are certain design features like in the arms.
Yeah. Where are they from, Charles?
I thought they were, when we talked about them originally, I thought they were from E.J. Sue's
yes.
Infiltration designs.
That's right.
I don't remember E.J. Sue's having the split wing on the back there. I'm just looking at certain things like remind me of Dawn's thing, but changed around a bit. Like he didn't have the circular vent parts on the chest there. Those were up under the shoulder, like the collar shoulder parts there. But there are certain elements. So it looks like they've done a mismatch of both of them to come up with something that they're more happy with, but I don't know.
Yeah, because I think really the plane modes are from the infiltration comic. Because
well, both of them, like Dawn, also used the is it
the F-22?
Yeah. Okay.
He used that too. So
okay,
when Thundercracker got his upgrade in issue 4,
right?
He was an F-22.
Well, maybe it's inspired by that then, rather than the old school infiltration designs. Okay.
I don't know. I want a Dawn complete ongoing design. Okay, third party, make it happen now. You make it happen, I'd be willing to pay the price. But it kind of looks like the coloring choice that they've done is kind of like the coloring that we got in ongoing from like, James Brown or Andrew Dale House. It's really flat looking and kind of washed out in areas, especially with the Thundercracker. I don't like that blue at all.
Yeah. Okay. All right, so I'll wrap up the toy discussion with something that I found. So this is Takara Tomy has recently announced their Cloud, Brawn, and Starscream figures. So they're continuing this line of they started with Cloud Optimus Prime and Cloud Megatron, where they were retools of previous figures. I think Megatron was taken from the Bludgeon mold from the movie line of toys a couple years ago. And now, so these versions of Brawn and Starscream, Brawn is a retool of a Bulkhead mold from Transformers Prime.
I think it's first edition Bulkhead too.
Okay. And Starscream is actually the recent generation's Blitzwing mold. So we get a triple changer Starscream, which is kind of cool. Have we ever had that before? I don't think we've ever had Starscream as a triple changer.
Yeah, I don't think we have.
So, they look pretty cool. At least I like the Starscream. I'm more interested in the Starscream than the Brawn, but they both look interesting.
The Brawn, I honestly, my mind won't let me get around the fact that Starscream's not supposed to be a tank. So I just, my mind won't allow me that option. I honestly like the colors on Starscream.
Yeah.
I think it works with him. And Brawn, he just looks humongous. It's just that his head looks too small for his body. It's funny. But, I mean.
Brawn is supposed to be the little guy that has, is pissed off at the world.
But he's got the right alt mode kind of thing going. So I can agree with that. So there's parts of them that work for me. But there's bits of them that really don't.
Yeah.
I don't know. Brawn's head seems a little small on that body.
Yeah, just a bit, eh?
It's funny. What tickled me when I first saw this announcement was that these two characters were featured in like one of the very early UK exclusive comic stories. So, I think it was right after the Man of Iron. The Man of Iron was the first UK comic story that was exclusively in the UK, and then the second one was I think it was called The Enemy Within, and that featured both Starscream and Brawn. So I'm wondering if that's why these two figures were chosen. Maybe it's just coincidence. But I was reading the UK classics since I bought those recently, and that just tickled my memory. But cool, okay. So that'll wrap up our toy discussion, and we will move on to comics. So we do have a review of Regeneration 1, number 99, coming up for this week. Before we get into that, though, just a bit of news. We had a story from Bleeding Cool talking about Rom, the Space Knight, and whether or not IDW might fold him into the Transformers universe, which it's kind of an interesting story. I guess Rom, the Space Knight, was a toy that was created in the late 70s and then turned into a comic book. And the toy kind of just failed and fell flat, but the comic book continued on for several years and was kind of popular and was in the Marvel Universe. And it looks like recently Hasbro has applied for some trademarks that reference Rom. And, you know, and it also mentions a toy action figures and toy robots convertible into other visual toy forms, which, of course, makes you think of Transformers. So, you know, wondering if this is going to somehow be folded into the actual Transformers universe, and we might get Rom's, I guess Rom's origin story was that he was kind of a humanoid life form and was turned into a cyborg, but maybe that might be changed for folding him into the Transformers universe.
You think of Transformers, I think GoBots.
So you think there's going to be a completely, they're going to reboot GoBots as a completely separate thing?
Why not? Let's do it. Well, let's bring back some GoBots.
I think Hasbro has rights to part of GoBots, but not other parts. So I think that might be difficult. It's like, I think Bandai has some of the rights and Hasbro has some of the rights.
Hmm. It might be more in line with the GoBots backstory. Wasn't the GoBots backstory was that they were like humanoid aliens who were,
yeah, they eventually were cyborgs, I think.
Yeah.
Or did we just have somebody in the industry drop a major hint?
Wouldn't that be awesome if I was in the know of things, but unfortunately they don't tell me anything and I get to find out stuff later on? I'll know in a few minutes when I get a phone call, Alex, you're fired. I'll be like, what did I do? You just ruined everything. I'll be like, I was joking. Hey, I'll be like, hey, if you want me to keep my mouth shut, you should send me an email of what I can and cannot talk. Tomorrow I get it like an email. This is what you can and cannot talk about. Like, I was joking about that too. Well, like, what are you people doing up so late? Like listening to ramblings at like 12:30 in the morning.
Well, thankfully there's plenty of lead time between now and when, you know, the show actually goes out.
Yeah, no one's listening live, thankfully. But yeah, so that's just a rumor, just speculation, so we don't have any advanced knowledge, but it looks interesting. All right, and the next bit of news that was just out recently is the May solicitations came out, so we'll provide a link in the show notes, but we don't discuss spoilers on the show. So if you want to find out what's happening in a few months' time, you can go click on the link, but we'll just mention the comics coming out are More Than Meets the Eye number 29, Robots in Disguise number 29, Windblade number 2, The Regeneration 1 trade paperback volume 4, which collects, I believe, 96 to 100. More Than Meets the Eye trade paperback volume 1, a reprinting of that, and also Robots in Disguise trade paperback volume 1, reprinting. So if you missed those the first time around, you can pick up some More Than Meets the Eye and Robots in Disguise goodness. So, Alex, any comments on More Than Meets the Eye number 29? I guess you haven't started on that yet.
I haven't, but I read the script.
Okay.
It's good. Makes me want to be like, why am I drawing 20? Why am I finishing up drawing 28? I want to draw 29 right now. There's a lot of good stuff going on. Some awesomeness happens. And it's pretty funny.
Oh, so tantalizing. All right, so that's all the comic news we have this week. So we're going to move on to our review of Regeneration 1, number 99. So, Jeremy, you're going to take us through this penultimate issue of Regeneration 1.
I am. All right. So we got Regeneration 1, number 99. It has three covers, like normal. The first one has Starscream looking really angry at Jahax's hand. It basically has a couple scenes from the book. You see the Ark shooting at some of the Hub Network. The next, is the Guido Guidi cover that has, basically just a pissed off looking Galvatron. And the last one is kind of an animated style. It is, Shockwave shooting a bunch of the little, creatures that are the J-Axis's forces. And that's the Jeff Senior cover with Josh Burson colors. And the first one was the Andrew Wildman with Jason Cardi doing the colors. So, any opinions on the different covers?
I am in love with the Guido cover. That is epic. I'm all over that
one. Yeah, I like that one myself. The only thing about it is it feels like the image was blown up a bit. But it might not be, but
I like how it has the little retro dots for the darker areas.
It looks kind of like, I was telling Charles earlier, it looks kind of like Venom from, like, Spider-Man.
Yeah.
With all the liquid around them.
Yeah.
Like, symbiotic kind of thing coming from them. It's
fine. What about you, Charles?
So, I do like that one, but for me, I really like the Jeff Senior one. So, I just think, I've always been a fan of Jeff Senior's work. And I think this cover here, I like this pose with Shockwave here and, you know, Shockwave basically, coming back and tearing shit up here.
Yeah. And Alex, you said you like the Galvatron one.
Yeah. I like that one a lot. It's got Galvatron on it.
Oh yeah. That's your favorite.
I'm just like, listen, okay. And I'm like, yep, I can see Leonard Nimoy voicing there. Yeah. It's awesome.
Yeah. I actually prefer the first one, the Starscream one. The colors in that really kind of draw me to it.
Yeah, I do like the eyes there. That's really haunting.
Yeah, Starscream has all the yellow coloring, like the lines in them. I think that was really well done.
Yeah.
All right, well, on to the story. This is, as always, written by Simon Furman. Guido Guidi did the breakdowns. Stephen Baskerville did the finishes. Our friend John Paul Beauvais does the colors. Chris Mowry does the letters. John Barber is the editor, and Chris Weil is the editor in chief. So the book starts off with Spike being held by some like laser force beam things. he's like asking where he is, and this voice just tells him he's in Zero, and tells him that because he's got a combination of human, Nebulan, and Cybertronian bits in his body, he's going to be used to help this voice cross into the multiverse. And when Spike asks him to show himself, the voice presents itself to Spike in the form of Buster, and basically playing mind games with him, trying to guilt trip Spike in order to torture him. And as Spike is screaming for it to stop, you see that the Primus chamber just glowing green with energy going everywhere.
The energy coming from the Primus chamber is the same energy in Spike. You see that?
Oh, yeah, the eyes have the same glowing color.
I doubt that's coincidence.
Yeah, I didn't notice that the first reading.
Yeah, I didn't notice that till you pointed it out, Daryl.
That's why I'm here.
The next scene is on Throne World in the hub network, where you can watch My Little Pony.
That joke never gets old.
It never gets old. Rodimus is being held by Jaxus. Jaxus has captured the fleet, and he's put all the remaining Autobots in cages. And Jaxus is demanding that Rodimus joins willingly, and he releases the clamps that were holding Rodimus' hands. And he gives Rodimus the option, basically, to he can refuse and have the troops, his troops, killed, or he can comply, and most of the troops will be killed, and a percentage of them will be reformatted into, his new ideal Cybertronian bodies. And the ones that have Earth modes will, he's definitely gonna, he's said they would be excised. And you see all the Autobots in these little glass cages, and the bottom panel has Ultra Magnus asking Cup why he's so calm, and Cup says he's just waiting for the fireworks to start. As on the next page, you see one of the pieces of the hub network just exploding, and basically you see the Wreckers, they're doing a hit and run attack, and you get a nice I guess is that Top Spin at the bottom that has the he has a nice little beryllium baloney reference.
Yeah. Yeah, so, we've got, who is it? Broadside, Sandstorm, Roadbuster, Whirl, and Rack and Ruin.
Right.
Beryllium baloney, but no cesium salami.
No.
For shame.
Well, Grimlock there wasn't there to give the retort, so.
Right.
It's a Furman book. He should have been.
Grimlock's later on in the book. So after the explosion, Rook portals in to Jaxus's chamber and tells him what's going on. And then Jaxus yells at Rodimus to basically have his team stand down. And it looks like Rodimus doesn't say anything. And Jaxus, in his words, he cauterizes four cages with four Autobots in it. And the only one I could really make out was, I think in the bottom right-hand corner was Chrome Dome. I couldn't really make out who the other ones were.
I think the bottom left is Point Blank.
You have, one looks like Brainstorm, bottom.
I thought the bottom right was Brainstorm.
Yeah. Could be. It's just really hard to tell. Maybe with the final copy will be a little bit clearer.
One thing I didn't like in that panel where Jaxus is demanding that Rodimus order his troops to stand down, it feels to me like there's either a panel missing or a word bubble missing, because I would, cause you know, it goes like stand down and surrender now, and then it goes straight to G-Axis saying, I see, then I must after all choose.
I mean, it looks like Rodimus should be saying something there, but he doesn't.
Or just, you know, have like a small inset panel with Rodimus's face where he's just like stone faced and not responding or something like that.
Or a little word bubble with a dot, dot, dot. Like
just F you.
I mean, it's kind of weird because on the next page, G-Axis is starting to call out some more cage numbers and Rodimus says, I can't. I mean, I don't know. It just seems that might have also been served having on the other page as well.
Right.
He says he can't even if he wants to. And he's if it's the squad he thinks he is, they're going to keep going until they're all dead. And then Rook's ordered to shut down the slam tubes where they are and to find the wreckers. And then it switches to Cybertron with Shockwave standing there. And this panel on this is just absolutely gorgeous.
It's the best looking panel in the whole book,
I think.
Yeah, I don't think that's Cybertron. I think that's just another part of the Hub network, because you can see, like, in the background, that another, like, string, you know, connecting those two planets.
Yeah, I see that.
Shockwave was bright and shining about it.
Yeah. I mean, you have, like, light shining off of a part of the planet there, and you can see the G-Axis's troops flying in the background. I mean, it's an amazing panel.
Yep.
And then it goes, Shockwave, he points out that those troops are, they look like search parties and thinks that they've been detected. Starscream thinks that, that they've actually detected someone else and they, you know, it's a good distraction. So Shockwave comments that, the being that wears the forms of Starscream is how he put it. It's still unknown to him. So then, Starscream kind of, he says basically that he's transcendent energy and that he is underbase and flies. He basically turns into a bolt of energy and flies off, and Shockwave's like an enigma wrapped in a mystery and transforms into his gun mode and flies off.
So Starscream is a triple changer.
From robot to plane to lightning
to energy.
Bolt. The lightning bolt.
Yeah. So, now the next scene goes on to Earth. You have Linda Chang, who, if you remember, was Spike's wife, and she's, organizing resistance, getting the, like the mobile battle suits, all the tanks and everything all ready. Basically, it looks like a big G.I. Joe convention. And then she checks with GB Blackrock on Optimus's status, and basically he's barely alive, and she just wants him to stay alive long enough to answer her questions on who took Spike and how to reactivate the space bridge, because it looks like she's going to be going in and she's just going to be taking some nukes with her. So, you know, you don't play with her. And then we're back to Cybertron with the Dinobots, because it's a Simon Furman book. Now, so Dinobots are in, they call it Camp Zero, which now that, like, we know that Zero Point is a place. I didn't realize this before, but now I'm making the connection here. They're seeing this primordial, like, the demon creatures. They're forming these green cocoons around them. And Grimlock is making the connection and realizing that he was used by Primus, and all the other Dinobots don't know what he's talking about, and just they're kind of freaking out, and he's just like, you know, he's like trying to explain to them, but they have no idea what he's talking about. And that was that scene. So
yeah, and Grimlock he briefly mentions Viscus, which is a planet which was the original origin of the Dark Matrix monster. So this was the, back in the old Marvel series, this was the planet that Optimus Prime's original body crash landed on with the Matrix inside of it. And that's where, like, the Matrix first got a taste of evil and started, you know, turning into the Dark Matrix.
Okay, I didn't realize that.
And then, like, this was when Grimlock was a pretender, and, like, he, Jazz, and Bumblebee were a team of pretenders, and they went, they found this planet and were looking for the Matrix to bring it back. This was during the Matrix quest when Optimus Prime was looking for the Matrix so that they could get it back to fight Unicron.
Cool.
And that's why we have Charles.
Right. And we'll get to that issue in a year or two. So the next scene is in the Star Chamber on Cybertron, where the Autobots in there are trying to get a status report from Optimus and who's on Earth, and Quick Mix's crew, who's on Nebulos. And they haven't heard from either of them, so they're talking about shutting down the interface. As Galvatron walks in, and this must make Alex happy, he just starts blowing everything away and finishes off by saying he's the Ravager of Worlds.
And his eyes have that green Matrix, evil Matrix glow.
It just looks like somebody sneezed on his eyes. Like, you need to wipe that off. Come on.
You know, it's funny also on this page, I guess none of the guys are colored red, but they're all red shirts. Like, I don't recognize a single bot here, and the only reason they're here is to get blown away by Galvatron.
You see, yeah. There's a couple pink ones, so we can say those are fembots, and or most, like, we could say a lot of these guys could be fembots, because they're all, like, very sleek and streamlined, and Galvatron's like, I don't like fembots. Boom. Done.
And they die easily. Oh! I'm kidding.
Direct all your hate mail, sexism charges to Cybertronian Beast.
Yeah.
I'm eagerly awaiting the first issue of Whitley.
Nice save there, Daryl.
Yeah, I like to go with Charles's explanation better. They're red shirts. But basically, that's just all we see with Galvatron. Because the next scene goes into one of the slam tubes with the Wreckers doing what Wreckers do. And they are just fighting off a bunch of the troops. And Topspin tosses this neat bomb thing that just shoots off devices and basically 360 degrees. And as the enemy troops come forward, Rack and Ruin triggers them, and they all explode and send Geaxis's troops out into space. And who is this that says it? Is it it's not Broadside that says this. Who is that? One of them has a joke. It says, know what you call 30 enemy combatants on the wrong side of an atmosphere field? A good start.
Oh, yeah, that was Roadbuster. I was on mute. I was telling you it was Roadbuster. Oh. You were ignoring me.
Well, if I can't hear you. Yeah. But anyway, I thought that was a good good representation of what the Wreckers do. And we're back to the High Chamber on the Throne World. And Geaxis is just upset that he can't they can't defeat the Wreckers. And he's ordering Rook to do something, and Rodimus just gets a jab in about how the Master Species is underperforming, and Geaxis orders Rodimus to just get out of his sight, and some guards take him out, and Geaxis is just, he's talking about how everything is chaotic and stuff, and it just seems to really drive him crazy. He wants everything to be orderly, and you see all the different attack points.
He's Lord Business.
Yeah.
Release the crackle.
Okay, we can't get too heavy because Jeremy hasn't seen the movie yet, so.
Yeah, no. I have no idea what you're talking about. I figured it was some, like, British Doctor Who thing.
Yes. Now we shall speak no more of this.
Yeah. So, anyway, we go over to Shockwave, and he is in his flying gun mode, which I always thought was just completely ridiculous. And he is he's shooting some of the pieces of the hub network, drawing attack from the troops who fly in, but then he also has his body, but he's also still in control of the Ark. So as they come over to him, the Ark fires its weapons and destroys a bunch of them. And Rodimus, like you see Rodimus with his guards that are taking him away, and he basically just destroys all of them, you know, pretty easily, and then runs off to free the Autobots. And then it goes back to Jaxus, who basically says he's the best spot for the job. He's going to just take matters into his own hands. And as he's about to go go after the Wreckers, Underscream shows up, who's, you know, Underbase Starscream, fully glowing gold.
Nice.
He's gone Super Saiyan.
Yeah. There he is. And he since Jaxus doesn't recognize him, he shows all the different Underbase members, Boltax, Decanus, Talus, and Rokan, and then just shoves his fist into Jaxus. And, you know, he's saying how they're four, but they should be five. And so I guess Starscream is not actually part of the Underbase. They're just possessing him. And I'm guessing they're taking back from Jaxus what he took previously that we saw. And he's yelling at Rook to help him, and Rook is just running away. So we go back to where Rodimus is releasing the Autobots. He orders Magnus to coordinate everyone, get them all to the space dock, and then orders Cup to call the Wreckers off and coordinate a pickup point, which means that he lied to Jaxus when he said he couldn't he couldn't stop the Wreckers, and he just let those four Autobots die. And then he says, Cup, when this is over, you and I will have words, in the classic, like, Furmanism style. It's like, you and I, ... will have words.
Yeah, so, I mean, I guess in the moment he made that decision to, like, let those Autobots die, but he also didn't know that the Wreckers were, you know, had their own backup plan going on.
Right, but once he realized it was the Wreckers and what was happening, he knew Cup knew about it.
Yeah.
So it goes back to the outside where Shockwave still doing work, and he determines that enough damage has been done, it's going to have a catastrophic failure, and that the area needs to be evacuated. But before he leaves, he grabs Starscream, and as he's flying away, he's pondering that, is this emotion that he's feeling for, you know, that made him go back to rescue Starscream? And Starscream's no longer glowing. He's just in his normal normal colors, but he and Jaxus are both laying there unconscious.
Yeah, so it's not really made clear, but I guess the Underbase, like, left to another plane of existence or whatever. Like, once it grabbed Jaxus, they, like...
I think they just, they took what was taken from them initially, and then they left.
Yeah.
To parts unknown.
I'd hazard a guess that Jaxus is dead.
Or he's in the Underbase now.
That wasn't a very warm welcome by the Underbase. I don't think they want him.
Wow.
Well, they said they were four and they needed to be five, so...
My interpretation was that when, in the original book, when Jaxus stole, or essentially he stole part of the Underbase, he took one of their, for lack of a better word, personalities from the Underbase. And they've been in Starscream waiting for the opportunity to get it back. And now that Jaxus came back, they revealed themselves and concocted this plan to get it back from Jaxus. And they did that. They reached into his chest and ripped it out of him. That's my thoughts on it. But yeah, I think he's dead.
Well, if he's not dead in this scene, he's definitely dead after the next page.
Yeah. And the next page is basically explosions everywhere. The hub network's exploding. You see Jaxus' troops flying off. You see the Autobots flying off. You see the Ark, and I'm guessing Shockwave is in it, flying off. And like, this is just another nice panel of just, you know, everything's exploding. And then he goes inside the Autobot ship. Rodimus is saying how he feels this is a Pyrrhic victory, and that it just seems like that it's just it's a precursor, and something else is coming, and he doesn't know what it is. And then you see that a dark matrix creature coming up out of some kind of pool on Cybertron, and we get to be concluded. So that is the book, and I mean, what did you guys think of it?
Do you notice that the Primus, like the Primus eyes are completely dark now?
Mm-hmm. Right.
After the Matrix creature is rising from the pool.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's definitely... I didn't expect G-Axis to be wrapped up so quickly, but it was definitely, you know, a good story. Very, very fast-paced.
Yeah, it still feels like it's setting up things, and they're not going to have a lot of time to really wrap them up, you know, and give it enough time in the wrap-up. I mean, because it seems like it was jumping around still from a couple different places. Like, we have the underbase stuff, we have all the human stuff still.
Yeah.
It's just kind of sitting there. The Dinobot stuff.
Well, I think the underbase this is the end of the underbase story, right? And then I think in issue 100, we won't see any of the underbase anymore.
And 100's a double sized, right? So,
yeah.
So you get a lot of questions answered in that one, I'm assuming.
Well, it's the end, so.
Yeah.
I think 132 pages. So oh, okay. Not quite double size.
Yeah. But I think Simon has said that he wraps up everything, at least to his satisfaction. But I'm afraid that things aren't going to get the room to really be fleshed out.
Things, maybe he'll seems do a like, prose story later.
Yeah. Well, then it's like, that's where Regeneration 1 G2 comes in.
Yeah. That's right. I think we joked about that before. There's going to have to be a G2. They can't just leave it.
Well, there was a nice line here from G-Axis when he was talking to Rodimus, and like at the point where Rodimus just pissed him off and he was like, you know, telling him to go away, he told Rodimus how the Matrix will fuel his next generation of Cybertronians. I'm like, ah, G2.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, and definitely the art is really great. I mean, this combination of Guido Guidi and Jean-Paul Bove has been really working really well. I'm kind of, you know, I almost wish for issue one, like I know Andrew Wildman is coming back for issue 100, but I kind of wish we could get like two 100s, one with Guido and one with Andrew.
Or at least since there's more pages, if they could split it or something.
Yeah.
Is it confirmed that Andrew's doing the entire issue? Or is it going to be an issue zero type of thing where different artists do different bits?
No, I thought it was all Andrew for issue 100. That's what I heard. At least I remember that being...
Yeah, I think that was the plan from the beginning.
Yeah, because he didn't have time to... He had to step away from the book being the regular artist, but he was going to come back for issue 100 to close it out.
Well, we'll find out for sure in a month.
Yeah.
Yeah. But this issue, I think, does have the best art out of the entire series so far.
Yeah.
At least in my opinion. Any other comments?
Dem dare some sexy colors.
Yeah.
And I know the sexy beast that colored that. And all I have to say to him is,
It's like tasty gooseberry jam. So that is region 99. So,
one more
book.
All right. So before we go into our classic review, I just wanted to quickly mention, since the X-Files conspiracy crossover has been going on, and they just released their Transformers crossover book this week, along with Regeneration 1. And we got a chance to take a look at that. We're not going to really do a review here, but just want to give some quick opinions on the X-Files conspiracy crossover and the Transformers book. So if you heard the intro to the show, you might know how we feel about it. But Yoshi, why don't you tell us what your thoughts are so far?
I had high hopes, and I was let down majorly.
Yeah, I was expecting Mulder and Scully to play a bigger role, and since it was the X-Files crossover and not the, you know, Lone Gunman crossover, but
right,
you know,
and I'm not convinced they were able to figure out which continuity of the Transformers they wanted to go with.
Yeah, I was trying to figure out, like, that was distracting me the entire time, because you have Prime and Bumblebee kind of looking like their movie-verse versions, and later on you have Ratchet looking like he does in Transformers Prime. And I just, it's very confusing.
Yeah, at least they did, they had like one panel which was kind of a flashback of Optimus Prime fighting a creature underwater with like, you know, spinning blade hands. At least that made me think of, I don't know if you guys remember the Infestation 2 crossover, where it took place in the, like in the 1800s, and Optimus Prime had to fight like a Cthulhu monster. I'm thinking that it might be that continuity, like they, you know.
Yeah, it might be.
Since that was the one where the Transformers were always on Earth, and I guess we're...
But he says on that same page that they've been on the planet for centuries.
Yeah.
So that, he does kind of have a steampunkish look to him.
Right.
It's just a bummer.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I didn't... Bumblebee's characterization felt off to me, too. Like his whole, you know, ninja buddies forever.
Yeah.
It's like weird.
After having Mars Attacks Transformers last year, it's just a huge letdown.
Yeah.
Because you can see how good the crossovers can be.
Unexpectedly good, too.
Right.
Yeah. Oh, well.
And Alex is just sitting in the corner going, awkward.
I'm sorry. The message that you sent has not been received or computed. Yeah. You might have to reset your Alex film. Or he has entered standby mode.
All right, well, maybe we can wake Alex up a bit, because we're going to move on to our classic review. So this is Marvel issue number 23, Decepticon Graffiti. So Yoshi, take us back to the 80s.
All right, Transformers issue 23, Decepticon Graffiti. We've got a pretty awesome cover here with the Statue of Liberty taking up most of it. You have Runabout and Runamuck flying around the statue, and it appears, I think you can, it's implied that they have written, "Humans are wimps." And we can discern two things from this. One, their favorite color is purple. Two, they're both dyslexic. I should know. Also flying around the statue are some rat soldiers. Looks like they're in a bit of a tangle. As we open up our issue here, we peer upon the rat team's headquarters, Rapid Anti-Robot Assault Team, where Circuit Breaker is running experiments on the Autobots, in particular Skids here. And she's attempting to gain more knowledge about how the Transformers actually function. When I was reading, yes, and I hate yellow. Thanks for bringing that up. Just putting salt in the wound there, buddy. I don't know about you guys, but Skids is very disturbing looking here, all laid out.
Well, clearly movie Optimus Prime came by and took his face.
Jesus, he did something.
And there's a picture of him on that page at the bottom. There's Optimus Prime there, so, and when you go to the next page, there's a wall of faces, so he's just been collecting faces. That's where they've been going, into this book. Movie Optimus Prime collects faces and travels back in time to the 80s to put them in this comic.
Where Circuit Breaker is going to guard them?
It's all a tie-in to the multiverse.
Gotcha. Okay.
Continue.
Are you helping write this multiverse?
Who can say? This stuff writes itself.
Ah. All right. Moving on. In Wyoming, at the Decepticon base, Megatron has recruited two new Decepticons from Cybertron. They're the Battle Changers Runabout and Runamuck. And he wants them to deliver a message to Optimus Prime. And the message he wants them to deliver is that he wants to duel Prime to the death. I don't know if you noticed this, Charles. Well, you probably did. But the whole scene where Soundwave is talking with Megatron, and Megatron just kind of bitch slaps him,
mm-hmm.
that really felt out of character to me.
That whole
interaction was off.
When I read through this issue again, this scene made me think that, like, so in the next couple of issues, you know, we see kind of Megatron's downward spiral. And this made me think that that he had already kind of taken, like, something has gone wrong and gone wrong in Megatron's brain. Cause he's got this, like, weird throne made out of cars and he's, like, hunched over there. And he's, you know, got this cockamamie scheme to challenge Optimus Prime to a duel to the death when, you know, the last few issues, Megatron was kind of on a high. You know, he was planning things out. I mean, maybe when, like that human, you know, overcame his mind control at the dam, that kind of shook his confidence or something. You know, he's got some kind of depression or something. I don't know what's going on.
I like the way you put that because it makes it easier to swallow than it does just on its own.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I don't know. It's really out of character here.
Yeah.
Clearly, well, maybe the Decepticons have some domestic abuse issues.
All right. So, Runabout and Runamuck take off on their little mission. But they're annoyed at Megatron acting like he's still in charge. After 4 million years of not being seen or heard of, they're kind of insulted that he thinks he still runs the Decepticons. So in an act of defiance, these two battle changers decide that they would rather cause some mischief, than do Megatron's bidding.
Sorry, Yoshi, I have to interrupt. They're battle chargers.
Battle changers. That's dyslexia kicking in. Thank you. I will.
No problem.
I will start that over, or you want to just leave that in and show the world I'm dumb?
I'll leave that up to you.
All right. I'm sorry. Battle chargers. While deciding what they should do, they notice a family. The Actions. That is just the worst last name anybody ever made up.
I think it's Actins.
Say it again.
I think it's Actins. There's no I. Yeah. That sounds even worse.
Yeah.
I'm more interested in this kid wanting a chocolate covered sushi pop. And she's like, after I finish wiping the squid off from the last one, wow, where are they coming from?
Kid's got a Spider-Man shirt, so he's not too bad, but yeah.
It also looks like the mom is wiping the face off of the others, so there's a theme here.
It's interesting, because I'm reading this from the IDW Classics Volume 2.
Uh-huh.
The kid has a blank shirt here.
Yeah.
Oh.
Just white with red.
Yeah, they really did cut out every other instance of anything. That's too bad. All right, so
that is clear in this scene, vacations are the pits.
Yes. So the Actins are on a summer vacation, and the son in the family, Noah, he's not having a good time on this trip, and he acts out by writing "Vacations are the pits" across the store wall there. But this little act of graffiti vandalism inspires Runamuck and Runabout to follow the family on the rest of their road trip across America, during which they manage to spray paint graffiti on a lot of national monuments. And these acts of vandalism end up being reported on the news, and Rat goes out to intercept the robots committing these crimes. It's during the attack on the Washington Monument, Circuit Breaker is able to figure out the connection between the Acton family and the robots. And she, along with the Rat forces, follow the Actons to their next stop, Independence Hall in Philadelphia. So the Rat team is able to stop Independence Hall from being vandalized. But during the battle, Circuit Breaker is injured while trying to save Noah, who gets caught in the middle of some crossfire. And she ends up being ordered to recover while Rat goes on alone trying to intercept the battle changers.
When she gets hit, man, does she get hit? One in the head, one in like the rib cage right under the boob, and one in the butt. That's the secret to getting her taken out.
It's the triple combo attack. Yeah, she didn't go down easily.
I just want to know what editor proofed that.
Well, I mean, I'm always kind of curious why, like, she's this commander of an elite kind of government military operation. She's essentially walking around in her underwear, and no one kind of seems to care or make a comment or have any problem with this.
If a woman is walking around in her underwear, you don't say anything, Charles.
Okay.
Also, it's in continuity with the Marvel Universe, so they're used to having, you know, scantily clad superhero people flying around.
Oh, that's true. That's a good point.
And I was doing some reading about this issue, and I read an interview Budiansky gave, and he said that he got like a compliment note from Stan Lee saying that he really liked this issue.
Oh, that's cool.
And it might very well have to do with the Circuit Breaker getting hit three times.
How much you want to bet he has that letter framed?
Oh, I bet he does. I would. Okay, so after this battle, after Circuit Breaker is sent to recover, Rat goes on to try and intercept Runabout and Runamuck at the Statue of Liberty. So 2 weeks, two weeks go by, and Circuit Breaker's getting frustrated that she's not that nobody's getting anywhere on this. Donnie Finkelberg, Robot Master, convinces Circuit Breaker to use the captured Autobot she has to fight against Runamuck and Runabout. And she accomplishes this by kind of Frankensteining them together. And then she harnesses herself to the chest plate to be able to control this Frankenstein beast. It is very ugly.
Yoshi, why did you say it was 2 weeks later? It says the next day on the next page.
Because I can't take notes for shit.
Okay, just checking.
No, that's right. Thank you for calling me out. So while Circuit Breaker is combining this massive Frankenstein beast of a robot, the battle chargers have vandalized the Statue of Liberty with a little more than graffiti. And this is the first time in the comic that the graffiti that the Decepticons have done is actually legible, where it says humans are wimps. And in the very end battle there with Circuit Breaker, is able to take out the battle chargers, and they pretty much fall into the ocean. And I think I'm shortchanging the battle here. It's actually a little bit longer than I'm making it sound out to be. Hits are exchanged, things are hurt, things are broken. Circuit Breaker in the end frees the Autobots, and this was part of the agreement she made when she Frankensteined them together for their help. If I remember correctly, she put them together this way because she wanted control and she didn't want the Autobots to be able to take over or change the tide of the battle in any way. So in part of this agreement, she has set them free. Our friend Robot Master Donnie returns to his home apartment in New York, where he sees a report on TV about the Statue of Liberty and the damage that was caused and how much it's going to cost to repair it. And to me, what seems very out of character for him is he writes over his check for turning over skids to the Statue of Liberty repair fund of $50,000. Yeah, $50,000. Yep. It just seemed totally out of character for him. But it was a nice, sweet ending all tied up in a bow.
I think you're missing an important point here.
Yes, sir.
When Circuit Breaker got back to Rat's headquarters, she got fired for letting the Autobots go.
Oh, yeah. So now she's going rogue.
Now she's a freelance agent.
She's a freelancer, which might explain why we haven't seen much of her since then.
And this is the last we see of Donnie Finkelberg in Transformers, which you can, you know, throw us.
You see, that's because in that second last panel, he broke part of his glasses there, like one of the arms fell off, and I'm guessing his glasses fell down and he can't find the other arm, and he's just like, I can't deal with this anymore, and I just held up that part because... Well,
and now he's like, broke.
Yeah, he's like, damn it, I signed over that check, but my glasses! Oh, nothing is, like, going real well for me right now.
I doubt Marvel will take him back.
And I know Circuit Breaker is kind of, you know, she hates robots and everything, but they did, like, help her. They, you know, saved her life at one point during the battle. But she immediately, as soon as she gets fired, she's immediately like, oh, I'll get those robots. Like, you know, you didn't see that coming? I mean, it's like, it makes me think of, I don't know if you guys remember, there was a Simpsons episode where Bart plays hooky and he like witnesses a crime. And then, the principal Skinner is on the jury for like the guys on trial, and Bart has to confess that he played hooky in order to get the guy off, to tell the truth. And Bart's on the stand and he's like, yeah, I skipped school. And then Skinner jumps up and says, I knew it. I knew you'd slip up. And then Apu says, what slip up? He confessed. That's not a slip up. He did it on purpose. And it's the same thing here. Like, you agreed to let them go if they helped you. They helped you. So you let them go. There's, you know, there's no vendetta. So I don't understand why you're upset about that.
She definitely feels like a railroaded character.
She's just upset that they let her go, and she's like, but I'm circuit breaker. Come on.
I let you go, bitch.
This doesn't happen to me.
So she's got this incredible power with the suit, but no financial resources now. It'll be interesting to see if and how she ever comes back.
But and I did like the characterization of the battle chargers. I love run amok's after every sentence.
She, I wrote this on my review that they immediately remind me of Beavis and Butthead, and then you know a couple of other reviews in the TFW wiki also are making the same thing, the same claim.
Yeah.
You, Jeremy, though, you mentioned a toy.
Yeah. When the Transformers Club a couple of years ago, they had one of the Battle Chargers as their free figure that all club members get. And they had the other one as the one you have to pay for. And when you bought that one, it came in a convention style box. It's like the really nice looking box with the art on the front of the box is kind of an homage to the cover of this issue with the Statue of Liberty and stuff.
Oh, that's cool.
Unfortunately, they renamed, one of the to Overrun, I think, instead of Runabout, probably for copyright reasons.
Do you have those characters, those figures?
Yeah, I do. I have both of them. And the box also has slots to fit in both figures if you have them both.
Oh, neat.
Cool. Yeah, I am a member of the Collectors Club, but I only have the Run Amok figure. I didn't get the convention box with the other guy. Cool. So I guess that'll wrap up this issue?
Yeah.
All right. So, next time, so I think we're going to take a slight detour and go into the G.I. Joe versus Transformers issue number one, since they kind of interweave with the main, Transformers story.
That is correct, sir.
All right. So look forward to that in our next classic review.
The way I understand it is that, Transformers came out accepting everything that happened in that crossover and G.I. Joe said no.
Yeah, so it's part of Transformers continuity, but not part of G.I. Joe.
Right.
Yeah. All right.
Cool, cool, cool.
Okay, so that'll wrap up our comics discussion, and we're going to move on to our trips to the store. And so, unfortunately, Alex won't be able to join us for the YouTube portion that we will put up with this episode, but we do have him here on the podcast, so Alex is going to tell us some of the things he's picked up recently, Transformers related.
So, like in the last, can I go back to like the last week, 2 weeks?
Sure. You can even go back to Christmas if you want.
Oh boy. All the stuff I got.
And let's set aside the next 3 hours.
Well, I managed. I won't go back that far, but I did pick up the Masterpiece Smokescreen and Blue Streak. And I have to say the Blue Streak is, like, my favorite one. It has, like, one of the best paint jobs I've ever seen on a figure.
Yeah.
Like, I'm really happy with that toy. Recently, I just picked up the next wave of Generations figures that popped up over here. So I got the Waspinator. I got a Goldfire Bumblebee. I got Dreadwing. And I picked up 2 Skids. One haven't opened them yet, but one of them is going to be for robot mode. One will be for alt mode. Eventually, I'll track down an American release that comes with the comic, and that will be the one that stays in the package for me. I managed to get a Rhinox, which I'm excited to open. Right now, I don't have any space to open up too much, so I have to keep it in the box. The weirdest thing that I got was from today when I was at a Toys R Us not too far away from me. And they had a Goldfire Bumblebee in here, but it's not Goldfire's head. It's a regular Bumblebee head in like a tealy blue color. But it's in the, like, in the Canadian, like, Goldfire packaging with, like, the regular Goldfire art on the back and on the front and everything. But it's like the Japanese style of paint job in this one. And I'm like, what the hell is this? And I'm just like, I have to track down to see what happens, but I don't know, it's some weird variant of the figure. Like, this might be a mistake or something that I found today.
That's cool.
That's really cool. Mm.
I'd be like, I could have a rare Transformer. With my luck, it's going to be like, no, that's not rare.
It's this generation's Bumble Jumper.
Yeah.
So since you're in Canada, I guess all those toys have no pack-in comics, right?
Nope, we do not get pack-in comics. Although I am a lot happier with the Generations figures that have come out now, as opposed to the previous line, which didn't have any of the art, like the box artwork added to it. It was just a blank or the red checker background with a sticker of Orion Pax on every single one of them. Yeah. And I'm like, what's going on here? What is this horrible packaging? Now, at least each package has artwork of the character in the background. So I'm like, okay, finally, they're doing something better.
Yeah.
That's all the Transformers stuff I got, except for like all the comic books so far with every single cover, because I buy every cover. I like to support the books that I work on and everybody else's books, so.
Cool. All right, so we will edit in our YouTube segment here, so you can check out all the stuff we get. We'll have a link to the show notes if you want to see all the things we get. We're going to display them and show them on the video, so hope you'll check that out, and then come back here for the rest of the show.
Oh, wait, let me add some comments in there for you. Ooh, ah, nice, sweet. There you go. So
you need a stupid Yoshi.
That's just dumb. What is that? You and your nostalgia. There you go. Now I can reply to everybody's haul.
Sounds good.
I can't wait till you use that on the fact that I only have comics by him today.
So, Daryl, why don't you start us off?
Sure. Yeah, let's do that. I got a small Cyberverse figure. I was in Target, and if you remember, we were looking at something on the podcast a little while ago, and they came out with repaints of some figures, and I picked up this repaint of the Shockwave figure, and it's in Bludgeon colors. So they actually gave him a new head, and they're calling him Decepticon Bludgeon, and he looks kick ass, like really good. The new head form is really cool. The colors are spot on, and he looks really good. I'm really happy with him. There's two other figures with the with his little, like, the last gasp of this wave, and that's Ultra Magnus, which is a repaint of the original Optimus Prime, so the show accurate Ultra Magnus, and Unicron Megatron, which we all know is the form Megatron took in the movie for Transformers Prime. So yeah, so I picked this up. This was pretty cool. I also got Voyager Class Whirl. And this was actually at my local comic book shop. And they get figures like on the from the Diamond distribution. So basically they get them when they're instantly, like, as soon as they get released, they get these figures, and they get the U.S. releases. So I tend to have to pay a little bit more when I get them from my comic book store, but I'm getting them, like, months ahead of when they actually are going to show up in Canada. So this guy is just kick-ass. And, like, really cool articulation on him. His alt mode is really awesome. I really like the helicopter he's got here. The head on him is totally IDW. The More Than Meets the Eye head on him, is very cool. The body style, though, is not really IDW. It's, I mean, granted, it's Whirl. But yeah, he's got two positions for his legs. The way I've got him right now, he's got these, like, skis, which you can go with, and that's more IDW-esque, but you can actually go and turn the whole leg around, and he can go into, like a chicken leg kind of a way, and that's more of, like, the original toy way, so that's kind of cool. But, yeah, he's really cool. I'm going to do a review on him very soon. But one figure I picked up, and I was more than surprised with the response that it got, was something I picked up at the dollar store, and it is this. You guys recognize that?
Is that Sunstorm?
Nope. But it looks like a G1 Seeker, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's a knockoff. That is a total knockoff. Cost me $2.50.
Your dollar stores are weird.
But yeah, it's amazing. It's actually a little smaller than the original Seekers. Everything's totally plastic. You know, the original Seekers, this part here, like the chest area and stuff, that was all die-cast. There's none of that here. And you can really feel the cheap plastic in this thing. But I saw it, and I was like, shit, that's a G1 Seeker. And I got the yellow one, so it would be a Sunstorm for me. But yeah, this was really great. A really great little pickup for $2.50. So I instantly did a review of this thing in my little playlist on my channel for crap I found at the dollar store. And within like 2 days, I had 150 views on it. It was really popular. Wow. I was surprised. And I had people calling me, asking me where I got this thing. So it was really kind of interesting. It comes with all the accessories that the G1 Seekers came with, like the little landing gears there. I got the blasters. It even comes with the fists. So the fists are there as well. And, yeah, that was my haul this past week. It was pretty fun.
Nice.
I always like all those like really cheap knockoffs.
Yeah. Yeah, they're fun. I've done a few of them with my channel there. I think the most funnest one was the evil clever dog that I found about a couple months ago, which is a really terrible, terrible Transformer, but its alt mode is like a Dalmatian.
So with that Generations Whirl, I guess it's the wrong size to have the pack-in comic. But clearly there's no pack-in comic for that Whirl, right?
There's no pack-in comic. The only thing it came with was the instruction booklet and a sticker sheet. It actually comes with a sticker sheet, which is really kind of cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's still a mystery as to what toy Dark Cybertron Chapter 9 is going to come in, since that had the Whirl art on it.
That's right.
Cool. All right, Jeremy, what did you pick up this week?
I got Girl Scout cookies transform into awesomeness in my stomach.
Nice.
Seriously, picked up Scoop. Oh, wait, not that Scoop. That's the one I've always had. Picked up this Scoop, who is the new version of the original Scoop, which I don't have the blue Target Master. I think he's in a box somewhere. But this guy's really cool. They really like took a lot of the elements from the original toy, and it's a really good homage. This one actually has light piping in the head, and the little Target Masters are articulated, which the original ones really weren't. So, I mean, the original one, you basically just flip the gun down and there you go. This new one, the arms can move. I mean, the gun part flips down. So they're a lot more detailed than the original one, but they kept the exact same color scheme and everything. So it's a really, really nice little homage.
That's cool.
The other thing I got And thanks to Charles for telling me that these figures were in the Toys R Us by him, and I ran over and got them. I also got mini. Oops. Well, this is my original Armada Starscream, but I got the Minicon Assault Team. I hate that. I keep hitting that. But the Minicon Assault Team fits onto the Minicon ports on the original figure. So I got the three. Mine are in vehicle mode right now, but yeah, they combine to form a single robot, and then they also transform into robots on their own. So I thought they're pretty neat, and I thought it was really neat that they can fit onto the older Armada figures.
That's cool.
So that's all I got.
All right. So Yoshi, what did you pick up this week?
I don't have a Toys R Us, Charles.
Sorry.
It's very sad and depressing. I've got another eBay purchase. I picked up issue 96 of Regeneration 1 with the retailer incentive cover.
Oh, yeah, that's nice. Cool.
That's very cool.
That's those Jeff Senior.
Yeah, those were hard to get.
Yeah, I kind of got lucky on this guy.
So good.
I immediately got it and transferred it to a archival storage bag instead of the cheap one it was in, and it looks pretty. Can't wait to read them.
One day.
Sir Charles. One day, yes. One day I will get to him. But Sir Charles, or do you want to be called Mr. Barry White? I don't know. What did you pick up at the store, sir?
Yeah, so as Jeremy mentioned, I was stopped into my local Toys R Us and saw, hey, we got a bunch of Deluxe Generations figures, and it's the first wave of the figures that pack in the Dark Cybertron comics. So I texted you guys and said, hey, you know, check these out. Well, it was especially for Jeremy since I knew he was local. And so, yeah, I didn't pick up Scoop. I just wasn't interested in Scoop, and I wasn't interested in the Skywarp and Starscream figures. But I did like the Minicon Assault Team, and, you know, they are the Ammonites in the Dark Cybertron story, so I picked up a set of those for myself, too. And so here you can see them in their combined form. So this is Centuratron, the three robots that make up the giant robot, or I guess regular-sized robot since they're all Minicons.
Yeah, he's like deluxe-sized.
Yeah, so this is Centuratron, and he's composed. The legs are the tank heavy tread, the torso and the arms are the jet runway, and then the head is the helicopter wind shear. And one thing that you know, that is kind of loose here on the helicopter, the cockpit part of the helicopter on that Minicon, that's kind of loose and it pops off a lot.
Yeah, I noticed that when I was trying to put it onto Starscream, it just kept popping off like this. It doesn't stick on very good.
Yeah. But other than that, I really like it. I mean, I like the combined mode. I like the individual modes. The weapon is, you know, each Minicon has its own weapon, and they combine into one big weapon for the Minicon. So for the combined robot. So I really like it.
Oh, and we also found someone online found that if you buy three sets, you can combine all three into a bigger robot.
Right. So I don't know, Daryl, how good are your YouTube skills? Can you splice in a picture of that into the video?
yeah, I can. Yeah, I can do that.
Okay, cool.
I can do anything when it comes to video.
In addition to the Minicon Assault Team, it comes with the comic. So this is the comic it comes with. This is Dark Cybertron Chapter 4. And just to compare, I have my original, the Dark Cybertron I got at the comic book store. And actually, it's slightly, the page size is slightly, I don't know if you can, you probably can't see it in the video, but. Yeah, but it's slightly cut off here. So, and looking inside the pages, the art isn't scaled down at all. It's just kind of cropped. So they had a little bit of extra black border on the regular size comic, and that's just cut off, and also they don't have the roll call in the previously pages. Those are taken out, and it just
goes. Are there ads in it?
No, just on the last page, there's ads for IDW, but nothing else. So there's an ad for like the rest of Dark Cybertron, and there's an ad for digital IDW comics. Like there's the IDW comics app. So that's all. So that's what I got.
Cool.
Okay, we're back from our trips to the store, and we're going to end the show with some feedback we've gotten recently. So, first, we were very happy and excited to see that James Roberts has been listening to the podcast. So he put out a tweet a little while ago saying how he and he actually really complimented everybody who does Transformers podcasts. He said, "I'm astonished at the quality of Transformers themed podcasts out there. The effort that goes into them, very inspiring." And so I saw that, and I just tweeted back to him, and I said, "Hope we're included in that list." And he wrote back and said, "But of course, I was listening to you only today. Hashtag truth." So that's very cool.
Aww.
Hashtag truth, which means I don't know who you are.
Well, next time you talk to him, Alex, you can mention us to him.
I'll be like, "Were you really listening to him?" And he'll be like, "Who? What now?" And he'll be like, "Were you on that show?" And he'll be like, "You didn't talk about me, did you?" And I'll be like, "No, not at all."
Well, maybe this is incentive for him to listen if he knows you're on the show. But thanks, James. Thanks for the feedback. And we love everything you do, so it's good to hear that you like what we're doing. Well, I guess he didn't technically say he liked it. He just said he listened to it. So I'm assuming that part.
I think you're reading into this more than what's actually there. I think the Barry White of podcasters has a crush.
Maybe. Just a bit.
I plead the fifth.
He doesn't deny it. Run.
Yeah, Mr. Roberts, anytime you want to come on Transmissions, open invitation.
Wide open.
All right. So, and we had some more feedback from other listeners who are not writers on Transformers comics, but still important to us. Every listener is important to us. Yeah. So, we also got feedback from Tim Nicholson on Facebook, and he said, "You guys rock. I've been listening to your podcast ever since it started and really enjoy it. I really hope you keep going." And, that's great feedback. We're really happy you're enjoying the show. And if you haven't already, I please would encourage you to go rate us on iTunes or Stitcher or both, and make sure that we get some good reviews there, and that raises our visibility and popularity there, so more people will listen. And that will always motivate us if we know more people are listening and enjoying the show. That will always motivate us to keep making more. So thanks.
Yeah, thank you, Tim. Really nice thing to say.
Yeah. All right. And we got some more feedback, and this was a big one from our friend Dual Mirrored Gridwork, who is at DMG1001 on Twitter. And he wrote us a really nice long email that was filled with high praise for us, which we really appreciated. So he was very, very complimentary to the podcast, and he mentioned each of us by name, and he said, you know, he liked what each of us brought to the show. And Yoshi's, I think, has been mentioning it all episode, but you know, he's the one who our friend Dual Mirrored Gridwork is the one who mentioned the Barry White of podcasts, so I appreciate that.
A lot of ammo for a lot of time. That's gonna work for me.
And he also had some questions that he wanted us to talk about on the show. I think we're kind of running late on time this episode, but we will get to these questions. We're very interested, interesting discussion topics, and we could spend a good chunk of time on each of them. So we're gonna save that till next week. But thanks again for writing in, and we really appreciate it. We really are glad that you're enjoying listening, and we hope you keep with us, and tell your friends. Tell everybody you know about it who's into Transformers, and hope they can keep listening too. Mm-hmm. All right, so I think that'll do it for this episode of Transmissions, and we want to thank our guest Alex Milne for hanging with us for another episode.
Oh, great pleasure,
and we really appreciate your time, and hope you can come back again sometime. Maybe we can get you and Josh Perez on together.
Do it.
It's asking for trouble.
All right.
You'll see real burrito powers combined.
That's a double layered burrito.
Gross.
All right, so we will see you next time. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right. Bye, everybody.
Thanks for picking up our transmission. Give us feedback on our website at www.transmissionspodcast.com, where you can find all of our contact info on social media and links to all of our show notes discussed in each episode. You can also email us directly at feedback@transmissionspodcast.com.